some boys. We start a podcast.
All right, let's get it.
Let's go.
All right, so this is the Cine Bros podcast. It's going to be a movie debate podcast where the three of us, we all work at a movie theater and have very strong opinions on movies, debate movies that we like and dislike. Each episode is going to be structured where one person or maybe multiple people like a movie really strongly, and then another person really dislikes that movie, and then we debate our opinions toward it, and at the end we pick a winner based on who we think has the best points. Now, do you two want to introduce yourself and maybe why you like movies? What is it that brought you to movies as your preferred art form?
Okay, well, what's up, everybody? I'm Luke, a fellow movie lover, work at the movies with these guys. And I've always loved movies ever since I was little. My dad is a very big cinema lover like me, and he's been showing me all kinds of movies from his childhood ever since I was little. So that's why I'm into movies.
What's up? I'm Ray. These two are actually my bosses. I'm just a little rat, run around and do their little chores. But I've always liked movies since I was a kid. I always liked the Disney movies. And just as I got older, I just took it with me, I guess.
All right. I'm Tyler. I'm a film studies minor. So I have a more technical background in movies than these two. So a lot of my insight will be more on the actual aspects of filmmaking, where they're going to be more from a viewer standpoint. This first episode, we're not going to be doing any debates. It's just going to be like a meet the host type episode. So we're going to start. We're just going to go through our top 10 movies of all time. It's going to let you guys get a better insight into what we all like and what our opinions may be on movies we discuss in the future. So we're just going to say our movies, what we like about them. The others can chime in if they want to. So who wants to start that?
I'll go first.
All right, Ray, what you got for us? What's your number 10 movie of all time?
Number 10, Pineapple Express.
Oh,
okay. All right. It's a toss-up. But, okay, I remember in high school, I definitely watched this movie 2 months straight. Every night I went to bed, I watched it before I went to bed for 2 months straight. And honestly, every time I watched it, it got better. So, I mean, definitely, it's just... And there's definitely some other reasons as to why I like the movie, but...
All right, Ray. Now, I've never seen Pineapple Express. What is this movie about?
Seth Rogen.
Okay, so we're starting off bad.
He smokes marijuana.
Sure.
And he meets this dealer and he gets some weed called Pineapple Express. And he sees a murder happen and he throws the weed out the window and the guy finds it. And they spend the entire movie running from the guy because the guy can't let them know that they know about the murder.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good. Luke,
yeah, Luke, you haven't seen it either?
I haven't seen it either, but from the way you describe it.
It's funny. It's a comedy. It's funny, yes, for sure.
It sounds funny. Sounds funny as
heck. Yeah, honestly, I like that movie definitely would never be. You guys wouldn't like it as much as me, but I mean, it's on my list for person. Like, it's just my top 10 favorites.
You know what? That's what these lists are. These lists aren't what we're saying the top 10 movies of all time are. They're just what our favorite movies are.
Right.
I know that most of the movies on my list, you know, we talk about this a lot, that these two haven't seen a majority of the movies on my list.
That's
or
correct.
If they do, they don't like them nearly as much as I do. All right, so moving on from that, Luke, what you got? What's your number 10?
Okay, my number 10 film of all time is Pulp Fiction.
Oh, no.
Pulp Fiction. All right.
That's a good one.
Luke, before you say anything else about
okay.
it, Ray, what do you think of Pulp Fiction?
Oh, I love Pulp Fiction. It's definitely my second favorite Tarantino movie.
Oh, okay. So I just watched Pulp Fiction for the first time in its entirety the other day. I kind of think it's overrated.
Really?
Yeah, I really do. To me, its non-linear style kind of works against it, honestly. To me, it's a movie that doesn't really come together until after it's over. Like, I personally found it really difficult to follow what the story actually was, especially in like the early chapters.
Right.
And yeah. I thought that the like boxer like plot, which is like a main part in like the middle to end of the movie.
Bruce Willis?
Just kind of didn't hold any purpose to like the rest of the movie.
Okay.
But again, that's just me. You know, I'm not a massive Tarantino fan myself. I know both of you guys really like his movies.
Yeah.
And I do respect what he's done for the film industry. He's a very talented director. But his movies just aren't for me, mainly. But that being said, Luke, what do you like about Pulp Fiction?
Well, I want to talk about first how influential it is. For independent movies, you know, movies not backed by a big studio, and maybe the budgets aren't as big, they don't have as much exposure. This was only Quentin Tarantino's second movie ever. He made Reservoir Dogs a couple years before, which is also really good if you guys haven't seen that. But yeah, Pulp Fiction is very influential in independent filmmaking. It had a lot of stars. Before this, it's kind of neat. John Travolta's career was considered dead by a lot of people. He hadn't done anything for a while since the 70s, and Quentin Tarantino cast him as one of the leads in this with Samuel L. Jackson, and it kind of like revitalized his whole career after this for a while. He got nominated for Best Actor for it. Then, of course, Samuel L. Jackson is really good in it. He got nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and I think it's his only nomination, which is crazy to me because he's such a big name in movies. So their performances are great. Uma Thurman's really good. It was like her first performance, her breakout role, really. And then, like you said, Bruce Willis is in it, and it's really neat. A guy who is really well-known for big-budget action movies coming to do this kind of small independent indie film for kind of a relatively unknown filmmaker. It was pretty neat at the time, and that helped a lot with the success of it. And, you know, it's very influential for that reason. I think it grossed like something crazy, like maybe over like six times its budget. It was really successful when it came out in 94. There's just a lot of, you know, aside from all of the influence it's had and everything, I really like the nonlinear storytelling. I know you'd mentioned that. I really find it to be pretty neat way of doing things. A lot of movies hadn't really done that at that time. And I totally agree with you about the plot. You know, you don't watch Pulp Fiction for the plot. It's almost like a small series of stories that are connected and then kind of strung together over a timeline. So, the story isn't really that cohesive. Mm-hmm. Which for most movies would be a problem. But for this movie, I guess the craft on display is so good. The writing is so good. There's a lot of scenes where people are just sitting talking about like what they ate or something, driving in a car, just talking. But you still care the entire time. It doesn't really drag. At least I didn't think so. So the dialogue's really tight and it keeps the movie fun and exciting. There's all kinds of quotable lines and stuff in there. It's not my favorite Tarantino movie. And I have several more on the list coming up. But I really enjoy it. And I think it really kickstarted his career. So that's why I like it.
And you did mention something here that's in stark contrast to what I watch movies for. You were saying how story in Pulp Fiction doesn't really matter. Well, right. For me, story is the most important part of a movie. Like, I love writing and I love stories just in general, like books and everything. So for me to be able to connect to a story is one of the key things that makes me like a movie. Ray, what are your thoughts on that?
I like Pulp Fiction so much just because like of how all this like stories, separate storylines connect at the ending. You know what I mean? I don't think the story's bad at all.
I don't like either. It's a little choppy for sure, but I mean, you know, some people are alive in some spots that they had died before, and then they're alive in other spots. It's kind of weird, you know. Nonlinear storytelling isn't really for everybody. And for most, Tyler, with most movies, I would agree with you about the plot for sure. Like, I don't really connect with these characters, but I think the filmmaking on display is so good that I kind of, in this case, overlook it. Normally I wouldn't, but in this case, I overlook it since the actual filmmaking craft is so good that I can kind of and the dialogue's so good, I can kind of be okay with the story not being that great, even though I still like it. But I see where you're coming from, though.
Okay, fair enough. And, you know, I don't have a problem with nonlinear storytelling. As you'll see a little later, my favorite movie of all time is heavily uses nonlinear storytelling. But for me, Pulp Fiction just didn't do it for me. In the future, we might have a more extended episode where we go into our differences on Pulp Fiction more extensively. But for now, we'll leave it there.
Okay.
But before we stop, I just want to discuss, can we agree that Quentin Tarantino is a terrible actor?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah,
yeah, he's pretty bad.
He's terrible. In Django Unchained, that might be his worst. He plays like an Australian slave merchant that Jamie Foxx has to escape from. And it's like one of the worst movie accents for a movie that I've ever heard before.
He's pretty ugly too, honestly.
He is.
He shouldn't be on screen.
He's really weird. He's really weird. Like if you just watch interviews of him, he's very strange. I mean, he's my favorite director, but he's like a filmmaker as far as writing, very good, but he's kind of weird. He definitely needs to stay behind the camera for sure.
Yeah. He's better behind the camera.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess it's my turn, right?
Yep, go ahead. Yeah.
All right, so going off story, this is a relatively recent addition to this list, the most recent addition, actually. My number 10 of all time is Christopher Nolan's The Prestige.
Wow.
Oh, I've seen The Prestige. It's so good.
It's great.
All right, Luke, you've seen it as well?
I have.
All right, so for anyone that has not seen The Prestige, it is a movie about two conflicting magicians in, like, the late 1800s. And the entire movie is just them trying to one-up each other, and it devolves into just basically like corporate espionage, you know, betrayal, tragedy. The story itself is filled with twists and turns, which I thought was really great. Unfortunately, I did go into the movie knowing the big twist. I think you two know what I'm talking about with that one.
I know the twist, but I didn't know the twist when I watched it. So yeah, Luke, it was better for me.
Luke, did you know the twist before you watched it?
No. I knew there was a twist. I didn't know what it was exactly.
And, you know, like, sometimes, you know, you say that there's a twist in the movie and it kind of spoils it for some people. With the Prestige, I don't really think that's true because the entire story is basically just twists and turns. There's so many little details that build up to, like, conclusions that you don't notice until they happen. You're like, oh, wow, how did I miss that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you for sure, yeah.
Like, I don't really have a lot to say about this movie just because it is so recently added to this list, so I haven't really had time to, like, process everything that I like about it. But Christopher Nolan is definitely one of those directors that, like, you know, in discussion and hearing how highly praised he is, I kind of think he's overrated. But then I actually watch a Christopher Nolan movie and I'm like, oh, wow, that was amazing. And he totally deserves all the praise that he gets.
Right.
Mike.
I think some of his movies are overrated, though. Like, definitely, I think Inception's overrated.
I do, too. I think so.
Yeah.
I think Interstellar is overrated, too. I know a lot of people love it.
We're getting there, Luke. We're getting there. Shh.
All right.
You guys might see Interstellar pop up later in this episode. Okay, so number nine. Anybody who wants to start with number nine?
I guess it goes back to me now, doesn't it?
Yeah, go
it
ahead.
It appears that way. Go for it.
Number nine is Joker for me. You guys have both seen Joker.
That's awesome.
It's a great
how
movie.
Could Joker not be on here, man? It's just so good. And honestly, the thing about Joker is, like, there's, like, so many hidden messages in it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. For me...
And, like... Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so for me, Joker along with Logan, which I know we all think highly of Logan, right?
Oh, yeah.
Logan's on my list.
Yeah, okay. So Joker along with Logan to me shows that a superhero movie, or I guess Joker says supervillain movie, but who cares, shows that a superhero movie can be more...
No, that's the thing about Joker. I mean, when you're looking at it from just his point of view, like, he doesn't really seem like a villain when you're watching it. That's what's so good about it.
That is true. And that's one thing that I think Joker did extremely well is making you empathize with a character that is so established in the canon of modern society. It's like a villain, like the villain, one of the most recognizable, like, comic villains ever. And back to Chris Nolan, I think that Joaquin Phoenix, honestly, I think he's better than Heath Ledger as his Joker. I think his Joker
I don't agree, but I mean, I could see where you're coming from. I mean, it's neck and neck for me. For me, Heath Ledger edges him just a little, but that's just my opinion. But I mean, Joaquin Phoenix is great, and that Oscar he won was very well deserved. I don't remember how much weight he lost, but it was a ton, and he's already a pretty, you know, skinny guy. So, I mean, he looked like emaciated during it. I mean, he transformed himself physically, and it was just really, really good, for sure.
Both actors, to me, bring something to the character. Like, Heath is definitely much more of the stereotypical villain. All of his actions in the movie are villainous, and he plays it so well. He knows exactly how to make the audience both hate and love his character at the same time. His character does such awful things on screen, but you can't help but root for him just because Heath is so charismatic at it. But, you know, I think the one thing I will give Heath Ledger is his performance was a lot more surprising to people than Joaquin's was. You just look at Joaquin and you're like, that's a pretty bad dude. Like, you know, he's got his, like, big beard, long kind of, like, disheveled hair, you know, like, muscular kind of dirty look. You kind of would expect him to play a character like that. But with Heath, you know, he made his career as, like, kind of like the young, charming, handsome pretty boy. You know, one of his biggest movies before that was Brokeback Mountain. So his casting as the Joker, like, stunned a lot of people, and I think he did a phenomenal job of exceeding expectations. So that's a debate that could go either way, depending on the day for me. Right. In terms of, like, character and writing, I think that Joaquin's Joker was a lot better.
Definitely, yeah.
I got one more thing on Joker.
Go ahead. Like, go ahead.
For me, you know, as someone that has studied like the technical side of movies, I thought Joker was so phenomenally done in terms of like cinematography and lighting. It is one of the prettiest movies I have ever watched. Like,
oh yeah,
in like the greens and the yellows and like the blues, the pinks, that all are so vibrant in the movie. Just make it so pleasing to watch for me.
I want
to
watch it again now. We've been talking about it.
Luke, didn't you see it like 3 times?
I did, yeah.
I think I've seen it twice.
I had this thing where, like, it's hard for me to watch. Like, unless I'm seeing it in theaters, it's hard for me to watch a movie that I've already seen more than once.
Typically, I wouldn't watch it that many times in the theater. I might watch it again, but I guess my thing is I love, like, the experience of going to the movies and, like, eating popcorn and actually sitting in the theater so much that if, like, someone invites me to a movie, I, like, never really turn it down. You know what I mean? Even if I've seen it a few times. That's just me, though.
I get that. I definitely enjoy the movies, but I will definitely turn down a movie if I think it looks bad. Like, I'm very particular with the types of movies that I go in to actually watch.
Oh, yeah. I think
I'm not the same. I will go watch anything.
Which, to me, I think is one of the reasons that I have such strong opinions towards movies. Because every movie I watch, I expect to like. So a movie that, like, really blows me away, I love instantly. Because I already had such, like, high expectations for liking it. But, like, a movie that I dislike or hate, I will hate because it just, like, burned me.
Oh, we know.
I mean, if I watch a bad movie, I just walk out of it and I just kind of, like, laugh at how bad it was. I'm not really worried that I just watched a bad movie.
I'm about the same way, I'd say.
Okay, but Luke, what you got? Number nine,
it's pretty funny that he mentioned Joker because my number nine is The Dark Knight.
Okay.
Wow. Dark Knight just missed my list, by the way.
I guess when you think of superhero films that have really gotten super popular and taken over the box office, The Dark Knight's where you look to, usually. I'm nominated for several Oscars, which is neat. Not for Best Picture, which was really controversial that year because it definitely should have been nominated in 2008, but it wasn't. But it got nominated for many other things. We talked a lot about Heath Ledger earlier as the Joker. He won Best Supporting Actor, and he had died a couple months before the film actually came out in theaters. So I think that added to its reputation a little. I'll admit that for sure. But I think that his character almost makes the whole movie. I think the fact that he is a supporting character kind of keeps you excited. The fact that we don't focus on him a whole lot. If you look at his screen time, I think he's in about a little bit over half the movie's stuff. I looked that up somewhere. So he's not in it as much as you think. There's a lot of scenes he's not in. But I like that they keep it a mystery. I like that we don't really get anything into his backstory. You know, you never find out his name or who he is. He's just this really evil guy. We don't even really find out how he came up on the scene of, like, crime. He's just very notorious, very nasty guy. He's kind of funny at times, which is neat. I know the Joker, that's kind of his character. But Heath Ledger can pull off being very scary and then flip it on a dime and be like really funny during a scene. It's like dark humor, but it is pretty funny. But he almost makes the movie for me. And then of course you've got Christian Bale's Batman. He's great. His Batman voice, you know, that's been a topic of discussion. It can be a little cringeworthy sometimes, but I think it works for the movie. But he does really good, brings a lot of good physicality to it. All the cast is good. I mean, Michael Caine's in it. He works with Christopher Nolan and most of his stuff, pretty much most, I think all of most of his movies, if not all, he's been in a lot of them. But yeah, I mean, The Dark Knight is one of those movies that everybody loves. So it's kind of hard to say stuff that hasn't already been said. It's very dark for a superhero movie. Probably one of the darkest ever made. In my opinion, it's the best Batman movie ever made, hands down. Although that whole trilogy is really good. Christopher Nolan directs it really well. I think it's a masterpiece. And a lot of people have said the same things I'm saying. So there's not a whole lot to say. So that's basically my thoughts on it.
Okay. I respect it.
I'm with you on that, personally. I love The Dark Knight.
So you guys ready for my number nine?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Now I know, before I even start, that neither of you like this movie as much as I do. So my number nine, no. The other Ari Aster movie is Hereditary.
Hereditary.
So,
oh my.
Would you all like to hear why I like Hereditary so much first, or would you all like to say why you don't like Hereditary as much as I do?
I haven't seen Hereditary. I'm sure I would like
You've
it.
You've not seen,
seen
it?
It.
No. Oh, I thought you had. You I thought you had.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard it's super creepy. I don't really know if I want to watch it.
You know what? So, horror is by far my favorite genre. Like, without question.
Yeah, same. I mean, like, it's not my favorite, but I like horror. I'm growing into it more as I get older.
Right.
But Hereditary is the only movie that has ever truly scared me. Like,
oh no.
Oh my.
Hereditary, you know what? In terms of like traditional horror, it's not that scary. If you examine Hereditary by the demon movie type thing. And for anyone that hasn't watched Hereditary, Hereditary is a story about a family that is basically haunted by the death of the family matriarch, the grandmother, or the mom of Toni Collette's character, who plays the mom of these two children, Peter and Charlie. All three of, like, the core actors, Toni Collette, Alex Wolff, and Millie Shapiro, the dad isn't really that big in the movie compared to those three. Like, the acting of those three is world class. Toni Collette gives what, in my opinion, is like her career best performance in this movie. She should have definitely won an Oscar for her performance. And both kids, Alex Wolff and Millie Shapiro, do a fantastic job selling their characters. So for me, the thing that scared me the most wasn't the traditional demon part of it. It was the family drama at the core. The movie itself, it tells the story of a family just collapsing in on itself. And to me, that compared with the acting of the three main characters is what touched me so much to the core. Like, after I watched it for the first time, I watched like alone in my bedroom at 2 a.m. with lights off. I just sat there and I was so blown away and affected by what I had watched. Like, I could not stop thinking about that movie for like a month. And, you know, I rewatch it every now and again because I love it so much. And there are so many little details in that movie that Ari Aster put in there that I notice something different every single time I watch it. And it just makes it better and better for me. And I know it kind of conflicts with what I just said about watching it over and over, but it's not a movie that I have any joy rewatching. It is a difficult movie to watch, and especially rewatch when you know what you're in for, at least to me. But I know, Luke, you disagree, so go for it.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have differing feelings about the movie. I don't think it's bad. You know, the filmmaking is really good. Ari Aster, I think, is like one of the best modern horror directors, like, of the past several years. I think he's great. Him and Jordan Peele are probably my two favorites.
I think he's the best. Just straight up, I think Ari Aster is the best.
He is great, for sure. Really talented. I definitely prefer his second movie, Midsommar, to Hereditary, which may or may not have appearance later on the list. I think it's a good movie. It's not great, I don't think. There's a lot of great aspects in it. Toni Collette is awesome. If we were making like a top 10 movie performances, she would probably be in there for me. I think she's really good in it, and she makes the whole thing to me. There's a lot of practical effects that are pretty neat, especially for like a supernatural horror movie. Normally practical effects aren't used much in those, at least nowadays. Most horror movies nowadays are like CGI fests. So the practical effects are good. I guess the story wasn't that compelling to me. I've seen family drama done before, maybe not to this extent, but I appreciate it. I appreciate the efforts it took to explore family drama. And I think it was done okay, but I don't think that, to me, is a big selling point. I don't think it was done as well as it could have been, but it is pretty freaky, for sure. Most horror movies, like you were saying, they don't really scare me a whole lot anymore nowadays, but that one got under my skin for sure. But I guess I just see it as a better than most supernatural horror movie with some amazing performances that aren't usually seen in horror nowadays. But I don't think it's like a masterpiece or anything. So those are my thoughts on it.
All right, Sir Ray, I'm giving you homework. I need you to watch this movie and come back and tell us what you think.
I'm scared too.
I don't care. Just watch it. You'll love it, and I'll laugh.
Okay.
All right, so that's your homework. Now tell us your number eight.
My number eight is Jurassic Park.
Okay. Go for it. Tell us why you like it.
Jurassic Park, honestly, was my favorite movie as a kid. Honestly, like, I think the movie was ahead of its time, like, with just, like, the effects, special effects. Spielberg did such a good job of just making the dinosaurs look real, and I watched all of them, all of the Jurassic Park movies, so, and this was the best one, so that's why it's on my list. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I will definitely say that it is definitely a movie that is ahead of its time in terms of minimal use of CGI, combining it with practical effects, like get the best result out of it. I think Spielberg is a great director when it comes to innovating. But yeah, that's all. Like Jurassic Park is a classic. Like I respect its inclusion on that list.
Yeah, there's not really a whole lot to add. I mean, they pretty much said it. I'm not really as big on the Jurassic Park movies. I don't think they're bad. I mean, like you said, the first one is a classic. It's a really fun adventure movie. The dinosaurs do look great. That's probably the best part of the movie, how combining the CGI with practical effects looks really good. Yeah, it's fun. I really like it. I watched it a ton, especially when I was a kid. I loved it. So yeah, it's a good choice. I respect it.
And like another thing with it for me, it's like the movie that made me like start liking to watch movies.
Okay, that's awesome. Like,
yeah, you know what? Yeah. That's great. Yeah, that's good. Luke, what you got for number eight?
Number eight. Okay. So we just mentioned Hereditary and Ari Aster. My number eight is Ari Aster's second movie, Midsommar.
You know what I will say?
No.
Ray? No, really?
That's number eight?
It is.
Oh, Midsommar's so weird.
It's a weird movie, but it's great.
It's super weird, yeah. But to me, that's like almost its selling point. I think where Hereditary was, it was made very well and the acting was good. Supernatural horror doesn't really get to me as much. I'm more disturbed by, I don't know, different types of horror. I think the fact that Midsommar, it is my favorite horror movie. I like how it's shot and it takes place all during the day. I think the whole movie's like really bright, really pretty looking. And I think the fact that it can still creep me out during that setting, as someone who doesn't really like the dark too much, you know, I tend to feel safer, you know, during the daytime, middle of summer. But I think the fact that it still creeped me out and got under my skin with that setting was really impressive. Talking about great horror movie female lead performances, Florence Pugh in Midsommar is probably my favorite performance by a female, by an actress in any movie ever, I think. I think she's amazing.
Really?
Yeah, I think she's great.
Okay.
And I mean, Toni Collette is up there in my list for sure, but I think Florence Pugh's a little better. But I think she's great. All the cast is really good. There is some humor in there that doesn't work. I'll give you that. There's a comic relief character that feels a little out of place. But I will say that the opening 15 minutes of the movie almost makes the entire thing. And I know Tyler wants to. I'll just finish up my thoughts, and then I know he likes the first 15 minutes a whole lot. So just to finish up, I think it's very good, very creepy. There's a lot of symbolism in there, and it's my favorite horror movie. So go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, so going off of my discussion in Hereditary, where I said that Ari Aster, I think, is the best modern horror director. To me, he has a talent as a director that very few people have. And that, to me, is being able to get his leads to give convincing performances 100% of the time.
Oh, yeah.
The first 15 minutes of Midsommar are the most crushing 15 minutes I have ever seen in a movie. Like, Florence Pugh's performance in that movie crushes the soul. Even more so, in my opinion, than... Well, in Hereditary, you know, there's the scene. Like, the car scene that everyone talks about. And the aftermath is Toni Collette's masterclass in acting, in my opinion. So I don't think that Florence Pugh is as good as that. That's where I disagree with Luke. But Florence Pugh is phenomenal in that movie.
Any thoughts, Ray, on that?
I mean, yeah, I think Midsommar is cool. I think it's cool that a horror movie that takes place during the day, for sure. It's a cool movie, but it just didn't really hit for me. It's honestly kind of hard to watch for me, really, at certain times.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's super weird. It's definitely not for everybody, for sure.
Yeah, it just wasn't for me.
All right, so my turn for number eight. My choice for number eight is The Shape of Water.
Okay.
All right. I haven't seen that, but I've heard good things.
Okay. So The Shape of Water is, for me, the movie that best exemplifies the shattering of my expectations. The first thing I heard about this movie was we had this massive poster for it in the lobby of our movie theater. And one of my coworkers was very, very excited for it. And I'm not gonna lie, I watched the trailer for it and I thought, oh, fish sex. That's it. That's the move. Like, fish sex.
Wait, who was excited for it?
Tristan.
Oh, no.
Oh, my. I'm not even surprised.
But yeah, so it is so much more than that. Like, The love story at its core is so well done. Like, it doesn't feel like trashy or cliche. It feels real. You understand Sally Hawkins' character and, like, her mental state during this relationship. And just all the characters in that movie are so great in my mind. It's one of the only movies to ever make me emotional. I didn't cry during it, but, like, I felt things in that movie that, like, I don't feel normally when I'm watching movies. It was the first Guillermo del Toro movie I saw, and, you know, I'm glad that he won the Oscar for it because I think he definitely deserves it. The cinematography I thought was phenomenal. Just overall, his use of color, which is a theme in del Toro movies, is great, as always. The music is great. It's just a great movie that I would recommend that anyone watch.
Okay, I will put it in my notes to watch.
You better.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty good choice. I really like The Shape of Water. Like you said, I mean, everything you said, I pretty much agree with it all. I think that year, I will say that year, it was definitely between, at least in my opinion, between that and Three Billboards for me as far as who should win Best Picture. I prefer Three Billboards more just for the story. But when you look at filmmaking, like the craft of filmmaking, I think that Shape of Water, you're right, was better. Guillermo del Toro definitely should have won. I'm glad he did. He deserved it that year. There's not a whole lot more I have to say. I agree with that choice. It's a good one.
Yeah, Three Billboards used to be on my top 10 list, but, like, as I watched more things, it did get pushed down my list.
Right.
If I made a top 15, I think it'll still be on there. But, yeah, I just prefer Shape of Water more. Ray, what you got for number 7?
All right. You all ready for this? You ready for this, Luke?
Let's go.
All right, I'm hyped.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Wow.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see that coming from me, would it? Would you?
I would not have ever thought that.
I actually love that movie. I like it so much just because, like, you know how when you're reading a book, when you're reading it, you picture, like, what it would look like in your head, right?
Yes.
Right. I read the book before I watched the movie. So when I was reading the book, what I had in my head from what I was picturing while I was reading it was like actually the movie. The characters looked how I would picture them to look. The house. It was just really good setup. Like the setting matched the setting that I had in my head from the book. And that's why I like it so much. It's like the best book to film adaptation that I've seen. It's one of my favorites.
It was the first time you watched it in like an English class?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, the same.
Same here. Yeah.
It's definitely one of those movies that, like, has bridged into, like, the canon of school in that, like, pretty much every kid will have to watch To Kill a Mockingbird at some point. And the story itself is, for some reason, it's such a controversial story, especially, you know, throughout history since it's been written. But to me, the movie does such a good job of adapting the story in a classy way with actors that fit the role. Gregory Peck is such an embodiment of Atticus Finch. Like, he is everything that I pictured when I thought of Atticus Finch.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's so calm and, like, commanding. That's just a great performance. And that's all I have to say about To Kill a Mockingbird. Like, it's just a classic, kind of like Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, there's not a whole much more to add. I think Gregory Peck won Best Actor for it. I'm pretty sure he did back in the day when it came out, and he definitely deserved it. He did really good. The child acting was really good. A lot of times, and I think unfairly, a lot of people will judge a movie based on its child acting if a child is like one of the central characters in it, and the acting might not be that strong, which I don't think is fair because they're a kid. But I think all the child acting is really good. It's a really well-made movie. It stood the test of time. So yeah, I mean, it's a classic for sure.
All right, Luke, number 7.
Okay, my number 7 is a movie that I don't know if you all have seen it. It's Heathers.
I have not.
No.
Yeah,
tell us about it.
I didn't figure you had. So a lot of people probably haven't seen this movie. So it came out in 1989, and it's got Winona Ryder and Christian Slater in it. It was like their first two big performances, like their breakout roles. And it's obviously set in the 80s. It's set in a high school. The main character played by Winona Ryder's name is Veronica, and she's friends with these three girls, and they're all three named Heather. And,
okay.
And they all each embody – the movie is very – it's pretty satirical. It satires a lot of – it's almost parodying, in a way, most of the 80s movies. movies, like the John Hughes high school movies, like Breakfast Club. And it's making fun of those types of, stereotypes. Each of the Heathers embodies a stereotype. Like Heather Chandler is like the cheerleader popular girl who's just mean and horrible, awful to everybody. And then one of them is very shy. She actually has like an eating disorder, very shy, self-conscious, and is always put down by Heather Chandler. And then one is just kind of ditzy and nice, but isn't really there most of the time. And Veronica's kind of edgy and evens out the group. And what happens is she meets Christian Slater's character. He's a new student at the school. He just moved there that year. And you can tell that he's a pretty shady character. He's not really the best guy, but Veronica seems to like him a lot. She's got a pretty unique personality, so they go together pretty good. And after a party that goes wrong, she just really cannot stand Heather Chandler anymore, her verbal abuse, the way she treats everybody. So her and James is the character's name, JD, her boyfriend, want to prank Heather Chandler, right? Well, she does. So they wanted to make a mixture of like, I think it's like orange juice and milk or something that'll make her like throw up. And then it's just something dumb. But James switches out that cup for a cup of liquid drain cleaner. And Heather drinks it and dies. And Veronica's freaked out. So her and James forge a suicide note for Heather. And then,
oh my God.
So they cover it up as a suicide. The school takes it as a suicide. And Heather Chandler becomes like a martyr. This horrible person that everybody hated. All of a sudden, after she died, everybody loves her now. So, Veronica and James, I mean, there's like these jock characters that are very sexist and very horrible acting towards women. And they basically go on a killing spree and then set it up. It's basically like kind of like a Bonnie and Clyde situation. They kind of go on a killing spree. Veronica's reluctant to do it. James kind of leads her down that path. But it's pretty wild. It is a dark comedy. It's, I mean, insanely funny. I mean, it's some
it's
of the
a
most...
comedy.
I know that's the thing. That's the thing about it. That's so crazy is that it is 100% like a dark comedy. And it came out in 89. And I think it like definitely bombed at the box office. It didn't even make like a quarter of its budget back.
Okay, but you've definitely sold me on it. Like, it definitely sounds really good.
Well, yeah. I love it. I think that, it's not for everybody. If you don't really like high school 80s movies, I mean, it's in that vein for sure. But it is a comedy. And I think a lot of audiences back then who just came off of like Ferris Bueller and The Breakfast Club and 16 Candles probably expect it to be more like that. Because I watched some old trailers and it's marketed as just more of a straight, regular high school film. So I think people watched it and were just so turned off by the fact that they're making teen suicide a comedy movie. You know what I mean? But yeah. it's just so well done. And I know it sounds super weird and it is really weird, but the writing is very good. It's on a lot of like cult film lists that were successful after they came out in theaters. I love it. It's my favorite 80s movie. It's my favorite 80s like high school teen film. You know, like a movie set in high school. It takes place during high school. It's my favorite of those movies. It's a pretty weird choice for a lot of people haven't seen it. Neither of you guys have, but I don't know. I talked for a while, but that movie kind of requires a lot of background, but I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah. You have not sold it for me. If I'm being honest, like it sounds great for people that enjoy that type of movie.
Right.
But seems kind of outside of the realm of what I would like.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. I agree with that. It's not something that you would enjoy, I don't think.
Okay. But oh well, that's movies. On to my number 7. Blade Runner 2049.
Okay.
It's a pretty awesome one.
I haven't seen it.
Ray, you know, I'm becoming more and more disappointed about what you have and haven't seen as this goes on.
You know, I could say the same for you, though.
The only one of yours I haven't seen is Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a classic.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, man.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll try to watch it and we'll see what we think. Okay. So, Blade Runner 2049. So, I think that the original Blade Runner is the best science fiction movie ever made, like without question. It has influenced pretty much every other science fiction movie since it came out. And when I heard that they were doing a sequel to it, I was kind of like, it's kind of dubious about it. I was like, I'm not sure. Especially when like the original Blade Runner has such a history of like studio interference and, you know, tampering with the story of the filmmakers. But Denis Villeneuve, who is, by the way, my favorite director, and another one of his movies will appear later on this list, but he does such a good job with Ridley Scott's source material. Like, it feels so ingrained in the world of Blade Runner. You know, Ryan Gosling is star. I think his acting is phenomenal. He's my personal favorite actor of all time. I think the character of Kay and the trials and tribulations that he goes through as the movie progresses are very engaging to watch. It's a gorgeous movie, just like the first Blade Runner was. And the character Joy, played by Anya de Armas, was a really standout. And that's not something you would expect, like, given the character that she plays. For anyone that hasn't seen it, she plays, like, this holographic lover to Ryan Gosling's K. And normally in like a science fiction movie, those characters would just kind of be like there for sex appeal and like don't really influence the story at all. But in some ways, like in the latter half of the movie, like she becomes a major character in the story and drives the plot of it forward. And especially as K begins to like unravel what's actually going on in the world of this movie, it's definitely a movie for me that like I enjoy watching just because I love sci-fi, and that's like such a pure sci-fi movie for me. Either you have any thoughts on that one? Well, Ray, you haven't seen it, but Luke?
Yeah, I remember, I think I've only seen it one time, and that was when me and you went and saw it, I think.
We did, in 3D.
We did, yeah. One of the only times that I think 3D kind of helped out the experience. Usually it doesn't.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. I think it works for that movie. You know, I'm not as high on the first Blade Runner. I think it's good, and I definitely see its influence all over the place in science fiction and movies in general. But I think that Blade Runner 2049 is much better. If I was making a top 20, Blade Runner 2049 would probably be in there. I really, really like it a lot. I think they used Harrison Ford's character from the first one, and they didn't overdo it with him being in there. It was like the perfect amount of
bringing him back in.
It was like the perfect amount of bringing him back into it. Like you said, the cinematography. There's another movie on this list that I love the cinematography the most out of any movie, but this is probably like my number two favorite cinematography of all time. Probably like the second best looking movie I've ever seen. It looks great. The acting's good. The effects are really good. Denis Villeneuve, I know you're a big fan of him. He's a great filmmaker for sure. Kind of came out of nowhere over like the past decade, but he's great. Yeah, I don't really have much more to add. It's a really good one.
And going on with the cinematography, there's a scene in the movie that anyone that watched will know what I'm talking about. Where it's a sex scene, but it's done in such a way that makes you marvel at the mastery of the editing and camera work. And it's, you know, since the main character's lover is holographic, you know, they can't really do it, but they hire a prostitute and they impose Under the Armistice's character onto the prostitute. And it's such a gorgeous scene. It's just amazing, really.
Oh yeah, I remember when we watched that, those effects, I think we were just like both like in awe of what was happening. It was crazy.
Yeah,
it was done very well for sure.
All right, so we on to number six now, Ray,
and it's me, isn't it? Back to me. All right, number six, we got Logan.
Great movie.
Logan,
great. Yes. Choice. Yeah,
I have another Marvel movie on my list that's ahead of Logan, but Logan's like my favorite non-MCU Marvel movie, just because like it's such a good ending to Hugh Jackman's character as Wolverine. Because how long was he Wolverine? It was like since 2002, I think.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Until like his Logan came out in what, 2017, somewhere around that time. And it's just such a good ending to his character. And it honestly, like, I don't get sad watching movies, but I definitely almost cried watching this one. It's super, super sad.
You know, I will definitely say that there's only one actual Marvel movie that I like more than Logan. Logan for me is definitely in the upper tier of superhero movies. You know, if I could just walk it back to my number 10, The Prestige, one of the things I liked about it was Hugh Jackman. Like, as a public, we are so used to Hugh Jackman, you know, being Wolverine. To see a movie where he doesn't play Wolverine and like showcases his acting chops is really great. He really is a fantastic actor. Luke, Logan, thoughts?
Oh, I mean, I totally agree with you guys on it. I think it's great. I think it's almost like blasphemy that Hugh Jackman wasn't nominated for Best Actor for Logan. It's his best work that I've seen, at least as far as playing the character of Wolverine. I think he's great. Patrick Stewart's always really cool. It was good to have him back.
The little girl's good too, honestly.
Yeah, she's, no, like, super little good. Girl is great. Yeah, and I'm really annoyed that, because I know when that movie came out, there were like rumors that they were going to do like a movie focusing just on her and like the other kids in the movie, but like ever since Disney bought Fox, I don't think that's gonna happen anymore.
No,
you know, it'd be great. That'd be like a great launching point for a new X-Men series.
Yeah,
it would be.
It'll never happen, unfortunately.
But yeah, I love Logan. I thought it was great. I don't really have much more to add. I mean, it's amazing.
One thing I appreciate about Logan is that like it's the complete antithesis for like modern X-Men movies, because my favorite X-Men movie, you know, that actually has like X-Men in the title is First Class.
I'd agree. It's probably mine's
definitely Days of Future Past.
You know what? And that's a good one. Like, that is a good one. You can definitely make the argument for both. But for me, I just think First Class is a little better. But with the exception of Days of Future Past, like if you go for Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix, like they just get worse. Like,
oh yeah,
the more they release, they just get worse.
I personally like Apocalypse. A lot of people don't, but I personally do.
Yeah, I don't like it. I'm not a fan.
Yeah,
I probably shouldn't have said that, but I do.
Yeah, I think Logan definitely did a good job of breaking away from that. Like, the tragedy of modern X-Men movies, if you will. Like, it was completely different. The acting was great. It was well-written. Yeah.
And it's honestly, like, it's kind of like a Western, too. Does it, like, not feel like a Western?
It is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Like, it's I've seen it described as, like, a neo-Western, kind of in, like the Coen brothers, like, No Country for Old Men style. Yeah, it's a movie that definitely blends the genres very well. Yeah.
Did you guys ever watch it in black and white?
I didn't. I don't know if I would like it as much in black and white, honestly.
I watched it in black and white. It was cool.
I haven't seen it in black and white either.
It's kind of with, like, Parasite. You know, I feel like just converting it to black and white kind of, like, takes away some of the appeal of it to me. Like, when you just, like, throw a black and white filter on it to, like, just sell some extra copies, it doesn't really sit well with me. But, like, if you look at a movie like Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, that's actually designed for black and white, I think it's a very good style. But no, I haven't seen it in black and white, and I doubt if I will.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Luke, number six.
Okay, so we're getting into, I know you, your last choice is your favorite science fiction movie, is that correct?
That's Blade Runner. No.
Okay, well.
You'll see later on what my favorite science fiction movie is.
Okay.
I know what it is.
You do.
I think I do too, yeah. But yeah, my number six is actually a very unpopular choice, especially with everything happening now, is The Force Awakens, episode 7.
I love The Force Awakens, Luke.
Thank you, Ray. I appreciate it.
All right. I really enjoy The Force Awakens. I really do. I think it is exactly what Star Wars needed after the disaster that was the prequels. But for me, my opinions of, like, the Disney Star Wars movies are definitely soured by The Last Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hate that movie. I think it's terrible. But The Force Awakens is definitely good. Like, it's nowhere even near. Like, it wouldn't even make, like, a top, like, 30 for me, probably. And, you know, the prequels are not objectively good movies, but, like, they do mean a lot to me because that's what I grew up with. So I think I even like the prequels more than I like Force Awakens.
Boo!
Okay, Rey, explain.
The Force Awakens is good, man. Rey's character is so good. Finn's character is so good. They added in the new characters with the old characters, and it worked. It worked. It was worked good.
Yeah, I think my biggest problem with Force Awakens, and it's a critique that a lot of people have had, so it's kind of like just reiterating what a ton of people have said, but it's just a rehash of A New Hope. It really is.
There's a lot of similarities.
I mean, I'd agree with that, yeah.
And, you know, I think that J.J. Abrams is a great filmmaker. I think he's a great writer, but
I think
it felt to me like he was being way too safe with Force Awakens compared to what he could have done.
I think that if he would have done the whole trilogy, it might have been different. Like, right. The whole trilogy would have been different.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because, like, Force Awakens definitely set up a lot of stuff that was just never touched on again. And for me, Rian Johnson's
ruined it.
He really did. And, like,
he did, yeah.
I like Rian Johnson as a filmmaker.
But I liked The Last Jedi.
See, I didn't. I really didn't. Like, I watched it opening night in theaters, and, like, I came out loving it. But then I saw it again, like, a week later, and I was like, ooh, maybe not. You know, and I definitely might have been influenced by, like, the online criticism of it. But it definitely is, to me, it's the weakest of the trilogy. And it disregards a lot of the things that were set up in The Force Awakens. So for me, I just don't like it, and I kind of judge the other movies in that trilogy based on my dislike for that one. But yeah.
But I mean, I definitely see where you're coming from on that. Because we'd mentioned earlier how this isn't a list of the best, like the top 10 best made films ever. It's just a list of our favorites. And that is, like, that exemplifies this choice 100%. I think that if you look at it, you know, there's been several Star Wars movie where maybe the craft was better and, you know, things were set up better. Like you said, it's a rehash of A New Hope, and I'd agree with that. But for me, this is based on my experience watching the movie that puts it up here for me. So I remember I watched it, 2015. So I remember that night. I wasn't even going to go see it that night. I had tickets for like the next weekend. And one of my buddies had an extra ticket because his dad was going to go see it with him.
But he came in clutch.
He did. He really came in clutch. He called me like several hours before it was going to premiere that night. And he said, "We just got an extra ticket. Do you want to go?" And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
So we go. I remember we went to Kiowa and I was 15, so I obviously wasn't working there at the time. But remember the lines? I've never seen so many people in there to watch a movie. We were lined up down the hallway on the side, like in the mall hallway. Mm-hmm. But it was, I mean, I loved it. 15-year-old kid hadn't seen Star Wars since the prequels come out. I mean, I've watched the Clone Wars and I loved it, but I hadn't seen a Star Wars movie in theaters other than Revenge of the Sith when I was 5, and I didn't really remember it. So I just remember I loved it. So much fun. The audience was very, you know, had a lot of good reactions in the theater. People would cheer, which I enjoy sometimes. I loved it. Very fun. That, I mean, the direction's really good, looking into the filmmaking side. And like you said, it sets up a lot of good things, Ray, with Finn and Ray are really good characters. Kylo Ren's great, but for the most part, they don't do anything with all these things that they set up. And that's really frustrating. So like, that's why I think that The Force Awakens is the best of the new trilogy, and I really enjoy it. So there are a lot better movies than The Force Awakens, for sure. But as far as just my own opinion, I just enjoy it more. I had a very good experience with it. So that puts it on my list for me.
I will definitely say that like the acting is the saving grace for this trilogy for me. Like,
oh yeah,
Adam Driver especially, like he carries, in my opinion, Rise of Skywalker and Last Jedi. His acting is phenomenal. He is such a great actor. And even like Daisy Ridley and John Boyega and Oscar Isaac, they're all great. And I really, it's kind of like the prequels, I really wish they were just given better material to work with. I really
do.
Oh
yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so is it my turn for number 6 now?
It yes, is. Sir.
All right, number 6. This is an oldie, but I think Ray, you've seen this. I don't know if Luke, you have. 12 Angry Men.
I watched it in school.
I've not seen it.
Okay, so 12 Angry Men is by far the oldest movie on this list, and it's a movie that has like been highly praised. I think it's like it's in the IMDb top 10 on their like top 250 movies of all time list. It's so good, man. Like, it's just so good. For those that haven't watched it, it is a movie. It's like an hour and a half long movie that takes place, for the most part, in the same room with 12 actors. And the entire premise is just a jury deliberating on the fate of the criminal. And that sounds like such a boring plot premise for a movie, but it is so well written and so well acted. You are just engaged the entire time. And it makes you question what you would do in that situation if you were on that jury. Because at the start, they are all pretty much convinced that their defendant is guilty. And throughout the movie, their opinion slowly changes as more and more evidence is presented and more arguments are like shown. And it really makes you question, like, do you think he's guilty or innocent? And is there enough evidence to convict him? So, and as someone that, you know, I love like debating, hence this podcast, it's a very interesting movie to watch. And it might be kind of weird to say, but it's honestly like the perfect rainy day movie for me. Like, it's so just like slow paced and chill, but at the same time, so engaging. And I just enjoy watching it. Ray, what do you think since you've seen it?
I think that my favorite part about it is that even when the movie's ended, you still don't like know if he's guilty or not guilty. They just leave it up for question. And the movie it's not really worried about that. It's more worried about the jury. And I just think that's one of my favorite parts about it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Luke, I think you would really enjoy it, Luke. I really do.
I'm sure I would. Yeah, I'd like to see it for sure. Just haven't gotten around to it, I guess. But yeah, I've heard great things about it, and I'd really like to see it.
Like, it's definitely one of those movies that, like, if you love movies, you need to watch it. Like, it's that good. But yeah, 12 Angry Men, my number 6. So we're finally in the top 5. Ray, what's your number 5 of all time?
Okay, Avengers Endgame, number 5.
Okay.
Hey, all right. I disagree.
I know a lot of people like Infinity War more, but for me, I mean, the end scene just is enough for me. When I was in the theater watching it, everyone was clapping when they come out of the portal after Cap just picked up Thor's hammer. There's just so many. It's the best theater experience I ever had watching a movie. Definitely. For me, and that's solely enough for me to put it in the top five. Then again, I mean, it's just 10 years worth of payoff. I mean, I've been watching the MCU movies for 10 years. And this one, like, it's like they all led up to this one. So for me, that makes it enough.
Yeah. I mean, I love Endgame. And if this was like a top 11 list, then it would literally be at the 11th slot. But and I mean, yeah, I really enjoy it. I just prefer my top 10 more. But I mean, there's not much you can say bad about it. I mean, I love it. It's obviously in my top 20 of all time. Like you said, everything came together really good. It was basically everything I wanted from like the conclusion of this, of the entire like Infinity saga. So it was done really well. For sure. I love that movie for sure.
You know, it's a great movie and it's a fantastic conclusion to, like you said, 10 years of movies. I just prefer Infinity War more. I think Infinity War had a slightly tighter story. But yeah. I can't really critique.
I mean, I don't agree that I like Infinity War more, but I do agree that the story is tighter, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Luke, top five.
So it's pretty awesome that was your number five, Ray, because my number five is Avengers Infinity War.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, the opposite end of the spectrum.
And I love Infinity War for almost, I mean, most of the reasons I love Endgame. I mean, even though this isn't the concluding chapter, it was really exciting to see. And I think that, and this isn't Endgame's fault, because Endgame, you know, it is the Endgame. It's how everything was going to wrap up. The only reason I like Infinity War more than Endgame is because the heroes don't win in the end. You know, I think that it had more freedom to really surprise audiences and do whatever it wants, since it didn't have to wrap everything up. It could just do whatever it wanted. And I remember watching it in the theater, and, you know, I mean, looking back on it, it was pretty predictable that no one was going to stay dead. But I remember watching it in the theater, and everybody was just freaking out when everybody was just turning to dust. A very depressing ending. I remember there's no big score over the last, like, little bit over the credits. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, it's pretty quiet for the most part. Kind of, you know, just really well done. That's why I like it, just because most superhero movies, especially MCU movies, they all feel pretty contained and stuff, and they wrap up nicely with a little bow on the end. Even, you know, there's might be an end credit scene or something, but that's why I like Infinity War, because it wasn't constrained to having to wrap everything up. It left it open, and that's why I liked it.
Yeah, I thought the acting was just better in Infinity War, personally. Like, there's a scene towards the end that was completely improv between Tom Holland and Robert Downey Jr. That's just phenomenal. The acting is great. And, you know, before we move on to my number five, I just want to had a comment about Endgame that I forgot to add. So I saw Endgame with one of my friends. Not going to use his real name, but we'll call him Salman for this because he's Indian. Okay.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, when a certain major character at the end dies, you know, I was chill. I was like, oh man, that kind of sucks. But I looked over, and my man Salman's just he's just sobbing into his chest, and I was like, okay.
I mean, we can do spoilers, right? I mean
yeah, Infinity War's
been out for a while. Was it Spider-Man?
Been out for a while. No, it was Iron Man.
Oh, you're talking about Endgame.
I'm talking about Endgame.
Talking
about
Infinity War.
No, Endgame. Yeah, when Tony died in Endgame, he was sobbing like a baby.
Both are sad.
Both are sad, but like, I mean, come on.
Tony's is definitely worse because I mean, we knew Spider-Man was coming back.
I don't know. I thought Spider-Man was sad. I thought Tom Holland just sold it as like the scared little kid. Just trying to hold on. Tony for me was less sad because he knew what he was doing and he accepted his fate.
I don't really agree with you on
that. I can go either way.
We pretty much agree, Tyler. We pretty much agree on Endgame, but or on Infinity War being a better movie, but I think that Iron Man dying is just so, I mean, it just ripped my heart out. You know what I mean? It was so, so sad. Probably the saddest thing I've ever seen in a movie, I'd say. Being honest with you.
Okay, you know, but, I respect it. Definitely not the saddest thing I've seen in a movie, but yeah, it's a good one.
Tyler, on to you.
On to me, okay. Now, this is probably the most random movie on my list in terms of, like, critical appeal, but my number five of all time is the 2013 or 2014, I can't remember which one, version of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Have either of you seen this movie?
No, but I know I know what it's about.
I haven't, but I know I've talked to you about it quite a bit.
Okay, so it's a movie about this guy, and he is a photographer for Life magazine. which is going digital only at the end of like the last issue. And he is tasked with shooting the cover photo for the cover of the magazine, like the last Life magazine ever. And he like kind of hates his job and like hates the people that he works with. So he daydreams all the time. That's like his thing. And I can't remember like the official medical term for it, but like his daydreams are like way more vivid. So it seems like he's actually living in his fantasies. And the entire movie basically just focuses on that and his quest to track down this photographer to shoot this image. And to me, it's the ultimate feel good movie. Like, it's just a movie that makes you feel good watching it. Like, you're rooting so hard for the characters, and it like makes you like appreciate the beauty of life. And combine that with like, it has what is my favorite soundtrack in a movie. It was done by an indie guy named Jose Gonzalez, who I love. It's just a movie that holds like a lot of sentimental value for me, and it's a movie that like exceeded my every expectation, because I was forced to watch it for extra credit in I think a freshman English class in high school. So like, you know, like most movies for school, you're like, eh, it's probably not gonna be good. But yeah, this one I loved. It's I still love it today, all these years later. I definitely recommend both of you watch it.
Indeed. Man, I just wrote it down.
It's cool. It just seems like a funny choice. You know, just when you look at, you know, Ben Stiller is a good actor, normally known for comedy, that kind of deal. But you sold it for sure. You're very good at selling it. So I'm definitely going to check it out. It sounds very interesting.
And it's a movie that kind of like divides critics. I think it has like maybe like a 61 or so on critics score on like Rotten Tomatoes. So like,
oh, wow.
It's definitely like the least critically acclaimed movie on this list. But yeah, I love it. I recommend everyone watch it.
All right, good choice.
All right.
Ray, number four?
Toy Story is my number four.
The first
The first one, yes.
Okay. Why? Curious.
It's just my favorite Pixar movie, man. It's the one that started it all for me.
Oh, it's really your favorite Pixar movie, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, really?
Yeah, I think so. I think it is.
Okay.
I used to watch it every day when I was a kid, when I wasn't watching Jurassic Park. It was one of those two, but it's just such a unique story, and then it sets up the whole trilogy for all the other ones, which are just as good.
Yeah,
trilogy. There's four of them now. I forgot this.
Four of them.
Out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that I have developed a greater appreciation for the Toy Story movies as I've gotten older. Like, as a kid, they weren't really my thing. No, I think it kind of went over my head. But like, as I've gotten older, I've kind of like realized like the entire four movies is basically just a story about growing up and like growing out of your childhood and like passing it on to like your siblings, if you have any, or just other people. And that to me is like a really special concept for a movie. So yeah, the Toy Story movies are great.
And
they really are.
It's they make you feel for a toy as a character. It's not like a real person. It's a toy, but you still feel for them. Is what's so good about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Luke, you like Toy Story?
I love Toy Story. It's probably my favorite animated film series ever, and I think it's neat because the first one is, I mean, I've never seen a movie where all four of them are like can be considered just as good as the others. They're all so good. My favorite is Toy Story 3 only, and it's very close, but it's only because of the last scene where Andy's driving away or Andy's giving away all of his toys to Bonnie and, you know, explaining why he loves them to her. Very sad. I mean, even as a kid, it got me tearing up. But that's literally the only reason. I mean, I love them all. They all are interchangeable for me. I think they're all great.
Yeah, no, I agree. Toy Story 3 is also my favorite because I think it's like the most emotionally mature of all of them. But yeah, they're all great. Of the original trilogy, I think that they get better with each movie. I thought four was slightly worse than 3, but it was still great. And Pixar is just great. Pixar is a great company. They make great movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Right,
Luke, number four?
My number four, going back to Star Wars, I had Force Awakens at number 6. Now I have Empire Strikes Back at number 4.
Okay. Yeah, respect
and
it. Great.
Star Wars is my, for those of you guys who don't know, Star Wars is my favorite media franchise ever. I love it. I love Marvel and DC and all of that.
Yeah, I agree as well.
Star Wars is my favorite for sure. And how I mentioned that The Force Awakens isn't the best made Star Wars film, and it's only on my list really because of my great experience with it. it's like the total opposite for Empire Strikes Back. I think Empire Strikes Back is the best made of them. In my opinion, it is the best science fiction movie ever made. Just the use of practical effects back then, because obviously they had CG, which was very limited, but they for all the planets and the ships, they had real models that they would use, and they still look great today if you watch it. The effects, you know, they don't have a whole lot of, I know Return of the Jedi has a lot of dated effects, but honestly there are some dated elements, but for the most part the effects still hold up, and it came out in 1980, so for the effects to still look as good as they do, that's definitely a great technical achievement. I think that it has the best twist of any movie in history.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I do agree. Yeah.
It was so well done. And it's funny because growing up as a kid, I'd always heard that, especially with my name being Luke. People said that line to me all the time, and they still do. But I mean, back then in the theater in 1980, after the first Star Wars movie was amazing, I think it topped the box office. I think it did. It was the highest grossing movie ever at the time. And then Empire Strikes Back comes out 2 years later, and it's so dark. And like, you know, the title's correct. The Empire Strikes Back, you know, the heroes lose, like the whole time they're losing. And it ends with Han and Carbonite and Luke without a hand. And just, I mean, it's very, very dark ending. And it sets up Return of the Jedi, and everything wraps up good. And it ends really well. But for just that movie to be so dark and not give you a lot of answers, that twist happening and not really explaining it to audiences, and then it ends and you don't get the next movie for two more years. I mean, there wasn't any internet for like all these fan theories and speculation like there is now. So back then, I mean, I can't even imagine what it was like, all the hype and anticipation behind it. So yeah, I just think it's great, very culturally significant, and it's my favorite science fiction movie ever.
No, I definitely would. I would love to go back and see that movie in theaters, like during the time. Like,
same.
Oh yeah.
I understand why that is people's favorite Star Wars movie. It's not mine personally, but like I completely understand it. It's definitely one of the most influential sci-fi movies ever made. Yeah, Star Wars. There's not much really you can say about Star Wars. It's been discussed so many times.
Definitely.
So let's move on to my number four then, since we're done discussing Luke's. So, Ray, you mentioned earlier that Jurassic Park was like the movie that got you into movies, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, the first movie that made me realize that movies could be more than just entertaining is another Chris Nolan movie, Interstellar. Now, I know, Luke, you don't think nearly as highly of this as I do.
Correct. I don't. Well, but you go ahead.
You know, for me, what it is, I saw this movie, I think it came out like 2014. So I'd have been like 14, 15 when it came out. That's a very like important time. You know, when you're growing up, you're kind of like coming into your own, like discovering what you like and what you don't like. And I saw it with one of my best friends, and, you know, we were in the theater, and like both of us were just like collectively marveling at what we were seeing on the screen. Like, in my opinion, this is Nolan's best movie in terms of like direction, writing, and everything, really. And just watching it like on a big screen with like great speakers and everything, in my opinion, that's like the best way to watch that movie. There's a scene near the end where he's jumping into the black hole that is...
Whoa, I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, there you go.
No spoilers.
There you go, Ray.
No spoilers.
You could have mentioned that earlier.
Uh-oh.
Well, Ray, he jumps into a black hole at the end, and a whole bunch of, special effects and stuff went into the making of that. And I remember being in the theater, and my mouth actually just dropped. Like, I was stunned at what I was watching. I had never seen a movie that had, like, awed me like that before. And I looked over at my friend, and he was, like, doing the same thing. So it's a very special movie for me in terms of, like, you know, my movie-watching history, because, like I said, it was the first movie that made me go, like, oh, wow, movies can actually be something. You know, I remember, like, once we got out of theater, me and him, we just discussed it for, like, hours, and, like, how much we liked it, and, like, how cool it was. And that's just like a really cool memory for me. So you just hold a special place in my heart. Luke, you got anything to say about why you don't like this much?
Well, I will agree. It's like a technical masterpiece. The effects are great. Acting's great. Matthew McConaughey, you know, there's a couple scenes where he just blows me away. He's fantastic in it. All the acting's good. Christopher Nolan's a great director. My only thing is that I didn't have the best experience. A lot of my friends, and you talk about it, and a lot of my other friends love this movie, and they all saw it when it came out, you know, when they were like 14 or 15. I didn't have that experience. I saw it last year, and I rented it off of Amazon, because a lot of people talk about it.
So you watched it at home?
I watched it at home. And I really, you know, I like the movie. It is good. Just for me, it's just a really good sci-fi movie with some pretty complex themes in it. And I do like it, but I don't, you know, it wouldn't be in my top 10 or anything. Maybe it would be in like a top 30, but so I do think it's overrated, but I still like it quite a bit. It is good.
Oh, wow. Okay. Like, yeah, like I said, like it is definitely one of those movies that like the only true way to see it is on a big screen with like actual audio. It's kind of like in the same vein of like 2001, Space Odyssey. Like that movie doesn't hit as hard if you just watch it at home. Like it has to be seen on a big screen to be fully appreciated. But yeah, it's a great movie. Ray, you definitely need to watch it. Put it on the notes.
It's already in there, buddy.
Already in there. All right.
I got a lot of homework.
You do. That's what you get, Ray.
Yeah, my list definitely like is a lot different than your guys'.
I think you are like more of like a casual movie observer, like what would be on their list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like for sure. I think like, you know, Pineapple Express is like pretty much the only one that's not like what I would call a mainstream movie.
Yeah,
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, you wanna take us away with the top three, Ray? What's your number three?
Get Out.
Get Out.
Get Out.
Okay.
Get Out. All right.
It's a great movie. Yeah, why do you like it?
I just like it because it's like the most original movie I've ever seen. Like,
okay.
The whole time I was watching it, I was thinking, how does someone come up with something like this and make a movie like this? And yeah. I think Jordan Peele just brought it to life so good. And Jordan Peele's a really good director, honestly. And he made the jump from like doing comedy on YouTube just to something like this. And for it to be that good, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked it a lot for sure. You know, when it comes to Jordan Peele, I think that I was just so surprised that he was so good at horror, it's his first movie he ever wrote and directed, and he wrote and directed it, which is impressive. I always think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But it's just very neat. I think as far as like debut movies, it's probably one of my favorite like film debuts by a director, probably.
I agree with that. Definitely.
Daniel Kaluuya in it is like
such a great performance.
Oh yeah, we were talking about top 10 performances. That would probably be
that was on my list.
Probably be in my top 10. Looking back at it, I probably should add that in there. Probably be one of my top 10 favorite performances.
Really,
he's great. Yeah, and then it's funny because he's very British in real life.
He
you
is.
Would never know it if that's the only thing you've seen him in. You would never know it. He does an American accent so good.
Yeah, that is true.
But yeah, I just love the movie. Social commentary's there. And it, you know, it hits you over the head, but it needed to be done. It's very good social commentary. So
did you guys think it was scary?
I thought it was pretty creepy in its own way.
I didn't think it was scary, being honest with you.
It didn't really scare me. I couldn't sleep at night, nothing like that.
I don't know if I'd call it a horror movie. The circumstances were horrifying, but as far as like actual scares, I wasn't really scared, but it didn't take
I would put it more as a thriller.
Yeah, it's definitely more a thriller.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Yeah, Luke, what's your number three?
Number three is I haven't talked about Tarantino for a while since my number 10, but number three is Inglourious Basterds.
Okay, never seen it.
Okay, I've seen it.
I love this movie. It was his first movie and he's done it several times since, where Tarantino rewrites history.
Yes.
A lot of like actual historical figures in there. And it's funny because it's the history that I kind of wish had happened. You know, once you look back at it, just because, you know, it's a really swift end to World War II, what happens in the movie anyway. It's really well done. Brad Pitt is awesome. This opinion, I know you guys won't agree with me on this, but I think Hans Landa in it, who's played by Christoph Waltz, who is just fantastic. He won Best Supporting Actor for that and Django Unchained. He's great in it, and I think his villain is so complex and carries the movie. He's probably my favorite cinematic, non-comic book villain, movie villain ever, I think. Probably my favorite. I think he's fantastic. So his villain carries the movie. Brad Pitt is really fun in it. He has a very cheesy Southern accent that works well. He's pretty funny in it. It's done really well. The dialogue is very tight. I know that it was the first Hollywood movie to not be primarily in English. Most of the movies in French and German. I think like only 35% of the movie was in English. So that's really impressive. So it's mainly subtitled. Yeah, but it's great. Really loved the movie. It was the movie that really got me interested in Quentin Tarantino for sure. So that's all I really have to say about it, but I love it.
All right, Ray, you seen it?
I have seen it. But I'm going to come back more to it after I say my number two. So you can go ahead and say your number three.
Okay. My number three is another Denis Villeneuve movie. Another sci-fi movie. You know, as you can tell, I love my sci-fi. But my number three, and if Interstellar was like the first movie to like get me into movies, this movie was the one that like made me love movies and like want to study movies and like the technicality of movies. And that is Arrival.
Yep. I knew that one.
Yeah. It is so pretty to look at. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous movie. The acting from Amy Adams is phenomenal. Like she sells her character so well. And Jeremy Renner,
and I was talking to Forrest Whitaker's in it too, isn't he?
He is, yes.
Yeah.
You know, Jeremy Renner, I talked about earlier with Hugh Jackman. Like, you know, most people know Jeremy Renner from playing Hawkeye in like the MCU movies.
Or he was in one of the Bourne movies too, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. In
Bourne Legacy, I think.
The bad one, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, he's great in the movie. Like, he's absolutely phenomenal. Like, both of the leads are great. And, you know, we were kind of talking earlier about, like, non-linear storytelling. For me, this is a movie that is told in a semi-non-linear way, and it works so well. You know, Ray, you haven't seen it, so I won't spoil, like, what in my opinion is, like, the best part of it. But, like, there's a twist involving the non-linear storytelling that is phenomenal. Like, the entire movie is just great. It's a great movie if you enjoy, like, pure science fiction movies with, like, intellectual storytelling and great acting. And that's something that I think Denis Villeneuve is great at in his movies, like, intellectual storytelling. This is one of the reasons he's my favorite director. And I'm very hyped for Dune, which is supposedly coming out sometime later this year.
Yeah, we'll see if that happens.
That does look good. That looks really good.
Yeah. Luke, do you have anything to say on Arrival?
I pretty much agree with you. I think Arrival's great. Amy Adams is awesome. She's, you know, she's in a lot of stuff. And since she's been in so many things, people just kind of know her, but they don't think about her much. But she's a great actress. And she's been nominated for like four Oscars, I think, like all kinds of awards. She's never won, but she's great. Arrival's probably my favorite performance by her. All the acting's good. The special effects are really good. Just a really well-done movie. Like you said, the non-linear storytelling, you know, is really interesting how they pull all the stuff off. I'll need to see it again probably before I can fully appreciate it. I do love it, though. But I saw it when I was like 16 when it came out. So I didn't really understand. I didn't really grasp everything that it was trying to say when I first saw it. And I haven't seen it since. But so I would like to see it probably to just kind of fully understand everything it's saying, but I do really enjoy it. It's my favorite Denis Villeneuve movie. It's not my favorite. My favorite is Blade Runner 2049, but that would probably be my second favorite by him. So yeah, it's a really good one.
Yeah. Oh man, I had a point. Let's see if I can remember real quick. Oh yeah. You know, I was mentioning earlier about how I don't really watch movies more than once, but Arrival is a movie that I can watch over and over again and not get tired of it. Like, it's that good to me.
All
right, Ray.
I think that of all the movies that you guys have told me to watch, Arrival is definitely the one I want to watch the most.
And you know, you should watch it. It's really good. It really is. All right, Ray, now you said your number two kind of goes in with Luke's number three, so let's hear it.
Oh, yes. My number two is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. All right. That's a great movie. Yes,
it is really good.
Yes. That, to me, is my favorite Tarantino movie.
It is my favorite Tarantino movie as well. And going back to what Luke said, how he rewrites history in Inglourious Basterds, he does the same thing in this one, but I think he does it better in this one, hence why this one's higher on the list. Well, and the other one's not even on my list, but I just like this one so much. I think it's Tarantino's best film, and I think like the dynamic between Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio is just, their characters, it's just so good.
Yeah, I mean, I love it for sure. And it was really cool because me and my dad have always loved Quentin Tarantino. So I had a really good experience. This was the first Quentin Tarantino movie that came out in theaters that, first off, I was like old enough to see on my own, you know, because they're all rated R. So this was the first one I was able to see on my own. And dad got to watch it with me, which was really cool. We had never watched a Tarantino movie in the theater together. So I think that heightened my enjoyment of it even more. But yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to add. I think it's great. Leonardo DiCaprio, it's one of my favorite performances by him for sure. Brad Pitt won Best Supporting Actor, and I mean, it was very deserved. He was awesome. He's probably my favorite part about the movie.
Yeah, he was great, honestly.
Yeah, and I like it because going into it, you know, people were like, it's a Manson movie. It's not really. The stuff that is in there about the Manson family is done really, really well, and I won't say much more than that if anybody hasn't seen it, because that's a movie you need to see when you don't really know what's going to happen. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's a really good one. It's probably one of my it'd be in my top five Tarantino movies for sure.
And you know, DiCaprio is so good.
DiCaprio is great. The trailer scene where he's freaking out.
Oh yeah,
that's a great scene.
The scene where he's like having his like midlife crisis with the little girl on set is great as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
like, and she's such a phenomenal like child actress.
She was awesome. Great. Yeah, she was great.
It's a great movie.
Oh yeah.
All right, Luke. There's been a lot of Tarantino recently. I don't assume your number two is Tarantino as well, by any chance.
It's actually not.
Okay, good.
Now, this movie has been my number one since I'd seen it until a couple months ago when I rewatched my number one choice, and that switched places for me. My second favorite is actually The Revenant.
Yes, which I've never seen.
Nor have I.
Oh, I didn't realize you'd never seen it.
I've never seen it.
Oh, dude, you need to watch it. It's so good. So I love this movie because, well, first Leonardo DiCaprio might be my favorite actor. He probably is. He's great, and he's great in this. It's not his best role, just because it's a lot of like visual storytelling. There's not much dialogue at all. The dialogue that is there is good, but he has to do. It's a lot of physicality. You know, he does the physicality very well. There's not a whole lot of dialogue, but he does great. It was his movie that won him his first Oscar, his first and only Oscar, which he should have won way before The Revenant. But I'm glad this movie got him an Oscar for sure, because he deserved it. But this movie has my favorite cinematography of all time. I remember I think it's beautiful. It's like picturesque. Like, I remember me and Dad went to watch it. The opening shot is just a slow panning shot where the water is just where the camera's right over like a babbling brook. And the water, I mean, it's like beautiful. It looks like you could reach out and touch it. It's just it's so beautiful. All the effects are great. My favorite scene in it is the bear scene, which everybody knows that scene where Leonardo DiCaprio gets attacked by a bear. The bear is fully CGI, and it's some of the best CGI I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. It's really the only CGI. It's one of the only shots of CGI, you know, parts of CGI that are used in the movie, but I think it's great. So that scene and the cinematography is what puts it at number two for me. The story, you know, it's a revenge tale, and it can be a little slow at parts. You know, I could see I rewatch it all the time. I could see people not being able to rewatch it because it is 3 hours. It is very long and slow at parts, but just the cinematography, the bear scene, the acting, that's what puts it up there for me.
Yeah, I don't have much to say. Obviously, I haven't seen it. I know you love it, and I'm sure it's a great movie. That's definitely on my list to watch. So it's my turn, number two now?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Now, this is my favorite science fiction movie of all time. Luke, is this what you think it is?
Can I guess?
I'm pretty sure.
All right, both of you can say it at the same time on three. Three, two, one, go.
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina.
Yes, Ex Machina is a great, great movie. Have both of you seen it?
No.
Luke? I've seen it. It's been a while, and I saw it late at night, and I was pretty tired, so I need to watch it again, because I don't remember a lot of it. I remember liking it, but...
Yeah, so by Alex Garland, who is, in my opinion, one of the most promising, like, up-and-coming sci-fi directors. It's a movie about this guy who gets taken to this, like, retreat in the mountains with his, like, billionaire boss who has developed an AI. And basically, the main character, Caleb, is supposed to conduct a Turing test on this AI, which basically is like, can an AI trick a human into thinking that it is also human? And, well, you know, not to spoil me or anything, but it turns out, yes, they can. You know, the acting is great from Oscar Isaac and Domhnall Gleeson, who would later reunite in Star Wars, obviously.
Yeah, General Hux, yeah.
Yeah, both of them are great in it, as well as Ana de Armas, who plays the main female character, the AI. She does a great job. I'm not sure the Japanese actress's name, but she does a great job as well. You know, as my major in college is computer science, so I have a love of technology. And this movie
is such an interesting take on like the whole like artificial intelligence thing and like our relationship with it. And you know, it's a gorgeous watch. The story is written very well. You know, it's just a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a whole lot to say about it, you know, since I did see it, but it's been a while and I don't remember much of it. But you sell it really well. It sounds really interesting. Going back to Alex Garland, I watched his next movie, Annihilation, and loved it. So I would probably like this movie as well. So now, yeah, like it's on my list for sure.
And you know, I remember seeing the trailer for Annihilation and thinking it was going to be terrible, and I ended up hearing like a bunch of good things about it.
I didn't like Annihilation nearly as much as I liked Ex Machina, but like it was still good. And still like he did a very good job directing it. But, yeah, like Ex Machina to me was just on a whole different level to Annihilation. But so yeah, if you liked Annihilation, you definitely like Ex Machina.
Nice. Yeah, I'll check it out for sure.
All right, Ray, we're finally here. We are an hour and 45 minutes into this recording.
Number one.
What you got?
Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
Oh, my. Good
choice. Yes, sir. I mean, for obvious reasons, it's number one. Star Wars is my favorite franchise of all time.
And yep.
This is the one that started it. So for me, it just had to be number one. That's really it for me.
I mean, just.
I knew Star Wars had to come in at my list at some point, and it's my favorite out of the whole saga.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured I'd put it at number one. Yeah.
Was that the only one on your list, Star Wars was?
Yeah. That's definitely.
I think that's definitely the weakest of the original trilogy for me, A New Hope.
Yeah, well,
see,
I don't care what you have to say. No, I'm just kidding.
See, I think Return of the Jedi is the weakest. I think New Hope and
really?
Empire Strikes Back. Yeah, I think Empire Strikes Back.
I agree with Luke. Yeah.
I think those two are pretty neck and neck for me. I like Empire Strikes Back more, but I think they're neck and neck.
I used to like Empire more, but now I like A New Hope more.
Yeah, I respect that. Yeah, Empire is actually my favorite of the original trilogy, honestly.
Luke, let's hear your number one.
Okay, my number one, and Tyler, I know you know how much I like Tarantino, so my number one is Django Unchained.
Wow. You have like four Tarantino. You love Tarantino.
Yeah, Tarantino is like Tarantino. Your dude. Yeah.
I mean, this one, it's funny. Being my number one choice, you'd think I would have more to say, but what I've said about the other Tarantino movies applies here. I mean, it's like if you think of quintessential Tarantino stuff, this is it. It's got all of his traits. The violence is really brutal, and, you know, it's over the top. People getting shot and exploding. You know, I mean, it's very over the top, but that's like his thing, and I enjoy it. And then the script is so good. There's so many times where people are just like riding a horse and talking or sitting and drinking a beer. But you just, you're so engaged and on the edge of your seat. And the things they're talking about aren't even that exciting, but it's just so well done. Like I said, Tarantino's best aspect is his dialogue. It's great. The story, talking about Pulp Fiction's story, isn't that great. This story is really awesome. Jamie Foxx is great as the lead. It's really awesome to see. It's, you know, it is a Western genre, but it should really be called a Southern because it takes place in the South. And he does great. He's a freed slave who joins up with Christoph Waltz, who after Django Unchained, Christoph Waltz also won the Best Supporting Actor Oscar for this movie, too. So he's great in it. And they join together and become bounty hunters. And then he finds out that his wife is being held captive, or his wife is a slave, and she is working for a plantation ran by Leonardo DiCaprio, who, and I know we've talked about Leo quite a bit. This is my favorite Leonardo DiCaprio performance ever.
It's great.
And him being my favorite actor and this being his favorite performance of mine is probably the reason it's great. I mean, all the acting is great, but he's probably my favorite part. He wasn't even nominated for Best Supporting Actor, which I think is insane, but the Oscars have never really respected Leo like he deserves. So,
I think we can all agree that DiCaprio is like the most underappreciated actor of his generation, honestly.
Oh yeah.
Like,
I mean, he's just always been there, so people kind of they take him for granted a little bit as far as
I would say so.
All of his performances are good though.
They're so good.
Even in like a subpar movie, he's really good.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, as far as Django, it's my favorite movie. I don't really have much more to say. I just love it. So that's about it.
All right. Somebody want to give me a drum roll? It's the worst drum roll I've ever heard in my life.
It was pretty bad.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right. I got to salvage this. Okay. That was bad. My number one of all time is Hooray. Have you seen it?
No, I don't know what it is.
Okay. My number one of all time is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yep, I knew it.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that.
Never even heard of it?
No.
Heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
All right. So this movie has, like, the most 2000s all-star cast you can think of. As, like, Mark Ruffalo, Kate Winslet, Kirsten Dunst, others that I'm not thinking of at the moment. But it is just so depressing. And, like, that's really funny, you know, that such a depressing movie would be, like, my number one of all time. But it's a movie that really connected with me at the time that I watched it. It's written by Charlie Kaufman, who is, in my opinion, like, one of the best writers in Hollywood. I think all of his movies are phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, I'd agree with that. Yep.
Yeah. The characters are so relatable. The main character, Joel, played by Jim Carrey, he is, like, such a normal dude with, like, normal dude problems, but, like, he's depressed. And it's so realistic. It's such a realistic view, in my opinion, of, like, depression and, like, trying to get through life. And his love interest in the movie, Clementine, is built up as, like, the perfect deconstruction of the manic pixie dream girl stereotype. Do either of you two know what that term means?
No.
I'll be honest with you, no, not really.
No? Neither of you. Okay, so a manic pixie dream girl is, like, a female character that's, like, obviously written by, like, a male writer, right? To be, like, the love interest for, like, the male protagonist in the story. She's, like, normally, like, really quirky. She's probably got some, like, weird colored hair going on. She's, like, depressed. And, like, her sole goal is basically to, like, make the main character's life better. Yeah, that's basically it.
Kind of like the girl from It.
No. Not really. The girl from It is, like, more just, like, a stereotypical, like, female horror villain or, like, a horror movie character. Like, a pixie dream girl is, like, a real... I'm trying to think of, like, a mainstream example. Have you seen, like, Big Bang Theory?
Yeah.
The blonde girl, what's her name?
Penny?
Yeah, she's kind of like a trope like that.
Okay.
Or like, have you ever watched Scott Pilgrim versus the World?
Yeah, that's another good example.
Yeah.
So this movie, like, it kind of builds up her character at the start to, like, think, oh, no, it's just going to be another manic pixie dream girl. But, like, she's so much more nuanced than that. Like, her character is brilliant. You know, the soundtrack is great. It's done by Beck, who I think is a great artist.
Well, I didn't know that. I like Beck quite
a bit. Yeah, Beck is really good. Wow. And the editing and, like, direction of that movie is phenomenal. Like, the opening shot is basically the main character. He's just, like, looking up at, like, a fan, like a ceiling fan, just going off. And, like, he just kind of shows him, like, waking up. And, like, it's a great opening. Like, honestly, it just, like, I was basically hooked just from, like, the first 5 minutes of watching it. That, and there's a scene in it where he goes to talk to his ex in, like, a library or, like, a bookstore, I think. And she, like, rejects him and he's walking out. But, like, he actually walks into the room of, like, his living room. Like, it's such a cool, like, practical effect. I think it's, like, genius. So I love the movie. I really wish you guys had watched it so we could talk more about it. But the movie is great. I recommend everyone watch it. It is very depressing. But, like, it's a good depressing, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've known that this is your favorite movie for a while now. I mean, it seems really cool, really interesting. I didn't realize all, like, the cool editing tricks and practical effects you mentioned. That makes me even more excited to watch it. That sounds pretty neat. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see some time. It kind of stinks that I haven't, so we could talk about it more, but I'll definitely check it out sometime.
All right. So that brings our kind of meet the host segment to an end. Like I said, this is just kind of like an intro to us and, like, our opinions on movies and what we like and dislike. In the next episode, we'll switch to our more debate focus, where we discuss a movie that one of us likes and one of us doesn't, and then one of us will moderate and pick a winner at the end. So look out for that. I think we've already selected what our first episode will be on, but you'll have to wait to find out what it is. It's a movie that I very much hate and that Luke does not. Ray hasn't seen it.
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Wait. Well, what movie is it again?
Oh, we can't tell him.
You'll have to see, Ray. You'll have to see.
Why will I have to see? I'm a host.
And?
Okay. Fair enough.
You're like the lesser of the three hosts.
Wow.
Golly.
That's a shot.
It is.
Gosh.
But you know what, Ray? We gave you your own segment on this show. Do you want to introduce that?
Yeah, go ahead.
So apparently these two want me to tell stories at the end of every podcast about just things that happen in everyday life, in my everyday life. So, I mean, today we'll tell a story from the theater since all three of us work at the theater.
But before we do that, Ray, a quick word from our sponsor, because I like money and I want to make money.
I like money as well.
Okay. So I think Tyler was with me as this happens. We're at work. I think it might have just been me and you, Tyler. Someone else, maybe.
Not right.
We're just sitting there holding it down. I'm on the first register. Okay.
Before we do anything, if you're going to mention names in the story that aren't mine or yours, change them. Like my Indian dude. I call him Salman. It's not his name.
Okay. Well, there's not going to be any more names, I don't think.
Okay. Sure.
So me and you were just sitting there having a nice discussion. And I guess the customer hears our discussion. We're discussing like musical artists. I think rappers.
I know this one.
And the customer just decides to ask me, so do you like Kevin Gates? And I was like, honestly, no. I think Kevin Gates is terrible. Actually, I don't even think I said anything like that. I think I just said, no, I don't like Kevin Gates.
Yeah,
and
you
said.
I think I've heard this story.
Her response to me is, you must not like girls then.
Bro.
And like, honestly, what makes her think that I don't like girls just because I don't like listening to Kevin Gates? Kevin Gates is terrible.
I didn't know Ashland, Kentucky had like a secret society of Kevin Gates.
Kevin Gates girls, fans, man.
I mean, golly.
They're not the worst.
I mean, he's okay. I mean, he's not great, but.
I had never even heard of Kevin Gates before that happened, Ray.
Thank you. Thank you, Tyler.
But that's pretty entertaining, though.
And you know what? Sure. I've listened to him, and he's bad. He's not good.
Yeah.
I think he's not. Okay. He's average.
So maybe she was gay.
Maybe.
She might have been.
That's nothing. We're not homophobic here. There's no shots to anyone. Yeah, that's just.
Except Luke.
Yeah. Except Luke. Oh.
All right. But, I think we're done.
That wraps it up. Yeah.
Wraps it up. First podcast in the bag. Like I said, we'll have our first debate podcast on the next episode. So if you like this one, you can follow us on social media. Pretty much all of our handles are Cinebros Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, all of that. But yeah, be sure to tune in for the next one. You guys have a good one.
We'll see you guys later.
See ya.